Thank you, Rachel.
So much.
You're welcome.
Online music journal, mp3.com, called 2007, The Year of Ronson. And looking back, it's easy to see why. Mark Ronson produced tracks for two of the most interesting singers in recent history, Lily Allen and Amy Winehouse. Pop history, anyway. Hmm. Don't write me. He also put a record out of his own over the summer. Version is an all-covers album featuring the above-mentioned Allen and Winehouse, plus Robbie Williams, ODB, the hooks, the beats, the master chef, mixing it all, have made Ronson a star producer. And through all of this, he's kept his own radio show on a low-watt, high-energy East Village radio station right here in New York.
It's a crime that this song is not bigger than it is.
This Junior Senior,
Take My Time for the new Junior Senior album. What's wrong with you people? Not you people. You people are amazing. Just other people that don't buy this record.
Mark Ronson visited our studios this week, and I asked him whether, you know what, he likes being on the radio.
I do. I cower when I have to listen to that played back. I'm like, oh my god, she's actually gonna play me speaking. But it's fun because the East Village Radio is set up in basically a bodega on the 2nd Avenue with turntables in the window. And I just like the energy. No matter how cold it is, I always keep the door open so you can hear the music out in the street and people are walking by. And sometimes, like during Fleet Week, you get sailors who want to come in and freestyle, like in their, you know, that whole outfit. And I enjoy doing it. It feels very New York to me, and I enjoy that.
Mark, how did you discover that you had this knack for mixing and matching all the right sounds? I mean, when you're a kid and you pick up a guitar, you have musical talent or you don't, or you have a great singing voice or you don't. How did you find out that you had this skill? Did you ever consider just being a straight-up musician?
Yeah, I used to play in bands when I was a kid and play guitar in bands and play along to, like, go busking in the park playing, like, Guns N' Roses and Lenny Kravitz, like, with the guys in my bands. And then I remember thinking I was going to be like a rock star, like a guitar player, and telling my best friend on the phone one night, like, yeah, it's great, we're going to do our demo. And he was like, really? I don't really see you as a guitar player. I see you more as like a producer behind the music. And I was like, you don't understand me, and like hung up the phone on him because he shattered my illusions of being a rock star. But he was completely right. It was funny. I don't know if he was psychic or whatever, but that's my role. I just realized I'm not supposed to be a guitar player in the rock band. Although I just did read the Slash autobiography.
How was it today? Did it rekindle something?
No, you just realize he was the last rock star god to like live it and not die. I mean, he has a cardiac defibrillator in his heart because he's done so much damage that if his heart rate goes too low or too high, it shocks him. So every time he's on stage and he's having a good performance, he like gets into it. It feels like a baseball bat's like swinging inside his chest, but he has to deal with that for the rest of his life.
It's always that thing about rock stars. If they don't die, they're going to live forever, and then they're going to look kind of good. Like Anthony Kiedis has done everything you can do to your body, shooting your body, and the guy looks great.
And then you have Keith Richards.
Well, I actually kind of think he looks great.
He does look amazing.
Keith Richards kind of way.
He looks amazing for 65. I mean, no, not to take anything. Actually, there's a funny thing. I feel like I'm on a Slash book tour right now, but I'm going to talk about it. There's a scene in the book too where he meets Keith Richards for the first time. He just sits down in front of him in some room at the Sunset Marquee, and Keith Richards just takes out a switchblade and does like three times, opens it, closes it, as if to say like, I'm the boss, mate. And then that's it. He just leaves the room.
He did the alpha male thing.
Totally alpha. He peed all over Slash's leather pants is what he did.
I want to listen to one of the tracks from your album. This is a cover of Britney Spears' Toxic featuring the late ODB and Tigger. When you decided to go ahead and rework that song, did you know you were always going to slow it down like that? How did you come to that?
I think so, because like that original song is like really fast, like where only club music works. That's kind of not really what I do style-wise, like for the funk and groove stuff.
With the taste of your lips, I'm on a dive.
yeah, I just started messing around with him. The more I kind of like, when you're a kid and you sit down with Appetite for Destruction, you figure out your favorite songs on guitar so you can impress your friends. It's still that way for me, like, not to impress girls, but I like to know the chords in a song like Toxic, and figuring it out, I was really surprised that they're just chromatic blues chords. And so I thought, what would happen if we slow it down, put some horns, and the more it started to sound like a Wu-Tang sort of production, I realized I had this old verse from Old Dirty lying around from when we worked together before he died, and I just tried putting it on there. It seemed to come together nice.
Of all your collaborations and all your projects, is there one that you're really proud of? One that you think, yeah, I was supposed to do this for a living?
I did a Hyundai commercial for Japan once. That was just remixing Aiko Aiko. No, those are actually the kind of things I had to do to pay the bills before this year. But I think the Amy Winehouse record is one of those things that I listen to and probably go like, I don't know anyone else who would have made this record. And I think those are the main things. You can't really pat yourself on the back and go, man, that's amazing, I'm incredible. And, you know, that doesn't appeal to me. And I don't think, you know, people like Johnny Greenwood and Tom York like high five each other after they write Creep or whatever. I think it's just music. But
you know when you do something right.
But you only know it's good because you feel good about it. You can never really think like, oh, the millions of people listening to this are going to think it's amazing, you know? Mm-hmm. Which, so music is so subjective that you just have to think, do I feel good about this? But even the first time that I played Rehab for Amy's A&R guy, and he's like, this is amazing, like, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, really? Not because I didn't think it was good, but I was like, why is this more commercial than anything else? It's just good. And but that record I'm quite proud of. And this other song I did for this English singer named Candy Payne, I'm not sure if that's going to come out here, but it's a song called One More Chance.
You were kicking around a while before everything started to click for you this year in a big way. I mean, you'd obviously had some success, but now you kind of have that success that a lot of the producers who almost are at the level of celebrity, like a Timbaland, like a Pharrell. Why do you think producers are getting more recognition now?
I think there's two reasons. I think part of it, not take anything away from Pharrell and Timbaland, who I really look up to and think are amazing producers, but the substandard quality of the actual musicians and the singers. So you'll be like, Atlantic Records signed this big new singer. We know he's probably not that great, but we can get a bit of press buzz. But if we get a Pharrell song, then it'll be out the park, you know? That happens a lot. And then I don't really know what else it is. Honestly, those guys are kind of different for me because they have a really recognizable sound from the minute you hear it. You know, there's like a snare drum or something, you know that's a Pharrell beat. Whereas I'm much more kind of like, depending on whatever the artist is, that's which way the sound goes.
Well, let's listen to another song and maybe you can walk me through how you decided to choose this sound to work with. Stop Me, it's a Smith song originally performed here by Daniel Merriweather. Let's listen.
Stop me, yo, oh, oh, stop me. Stop me if you think that you heard this one before. Stop me, oh, 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 stop me. Stop me if you think that you've heard this one before. Cause nothing's changed, I still love you. Oh, I still love you. Only slightly, only slightly less than I used to, my love.
Okay, Mark, so break down for me the choices you made here.
The reason I picked that song is because it's basically probably my favorite song since I was a kid. And I wasn't trying to win over Smiths fans or anything. I didn't have a deal at the time. I was just making records for these version of songs I liked so I could play them in my DJ set because I was just bored with all the music coming out. So I started to get the track together and put the chords over the beat, asked Daniel to sing it. He'd never heard the Smiths before, but he heard the song. The lyrics are quite esoteric. all these songs, it's quite difficult because they made a lot of indie sort of dark songs quite danceable. So the whole thing is to make sure it doesn't become ever too light. You're really trying to walk that line thinly between making it too groovy or like so that you forget that a song like Just by Radiohead is about, you know, doing yourself in. So I think that's the same thing with this song, and getting Dan to do the vocal in a way that wasn't too like funky or Prince-like but quite dark at the same time was really important. The only song I feel a little bit guilty about is the Coldplay cover on my album, because I kind of took the lyrics out, so it just sounds like this fun sort of like 50s Hawaii Five-O jamboree, and really the song is a bit more kind of subtle than that. But on the rest of the stuff, I really did try to keep the message, not just the melody, intact.
Are you going to work with Daniel Merriweather again?
Yeah, Daniel's on my label, Alido, and we're working on his debut album right now. He's been writing some great songs. We've been recording a lot of stuff with the Dap Kings as well that played on Amy's album and some a little bit on mine. Uh-huh. We're about halfway through it.
So in the middle of this sort of whirlwind year, you've had to do just a ton of press. I've seen a lot of press. I've read a lot of different interviews. Has it taken it out of you a little bit? I wonder if that gets hard after a while.
You just feel like a bit of an idiot, like, 'cause you realize that you've... You know, you're listening to some Brazilian woman on the phone thousands of miles away typing away on her thing, like trying to catch up with you. How do you spell Merriweather? And wait, why did I do Asian? Anyway, Brazilian woman, and you've said the same thing 18 times about how you met Amy Winehouse, and you just feel like a bit of a fake. But that's pretty much the worst of it. I don't really care.
That was part of an interview with Mark Ronson I did earlier in the week. And look, it's really funny. You know, we have all these buttons in the studio, cough buttons, and we can talk. He sat down and he just started playing with them right away. Like, as a producer would. He's like, if I press this, can I cough? Can I cough over here? What if I press this button? We had to threaten to move him.
I have to say, like, every...
He's a nice guy, though.
Well, with the exception of the Smith song, which when he said I wasn't making it to try to please Smith's fans, I heard that, because as a Smiths fan, that was the only one I was not totally in love with. But everything else, I was like, this is the best I've ever heard Amy Winehouse sound. That was the best I'd ever heard Britney sound, except it wasn't actually Britney. Like, he seemed to take all these things and really sort of elevate them in my
mind.
Sure.
He takes sort of a really simple pop song and then just gives it all kinds of texture and something you can actually hold on to and that you want to hold on to.
I want to find out where that bodega is that he's, like, spinning at with.
Somebody tells me that wouldn't be too hard to do, but because he does it on Friday night, so...
I think I know what I'm doing this Friday.
All right. Stalking Mark Ronson in the East Village. Hey, that does it for this edition of the Bryant Park Proudness. What is it? Proudness?
Project. Sponsored by Prada.
Ooh, if only. There's even more BPP goodness online. Head over to npr.org/Bryant Park for all the things that don't show up on the radio show but are equally as fine.
Yeah, in fact, we've got the latest adventures from this Alaskan lady, Jill Homer. She's training for the Human Iditarod. That's 350 miles of ice and snow. Normally done with a dog sled, she's doing it on a bicycle. So we've got an update on her progress. Hey, thank you so much for listening. This has been the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. We'll see you real soon.
If anybody knows anybody at Prada, just let them know.